Hey everyone, it's Lydia here. Today's episode is so good. It's like very fun and playful, but we also go into the really deep, like analytical psychology stuff that I just love to dig into. Lauren really brings a lot of perspective and ideas, and like she's just willing to get into it in this episode. Over the years, I feel like neurodivergent people, the perception of that has changed so much. I remember being at school and ADHD was seen as like these very naughty, like feral kids in the classroom. And we have come such a long way in understanding neurodivergence and talking about it and understanding the symptoms of it and how it expresses differently in different people and especially in different genders. It actually, a lot of the conditions can turn up in quite different ways. And you've probably seen this because the TikTok trends, these conditions tend to become trends. So like, first of all, I think it was anxiety. Anxiety was like the conversation that opened up mental health. It was anxiety and depression, and people were sharing their experiences and talking about like their symptoms. And we all got much more comfortable with that. And then there was ADHD. I think ADHD has been quite a recent one of people talking about, especially the difference between like how it expresses in women versus men. That's been kind of doing the rounds on social media. I think we've now moved on to autism. Like autism seems to be the neurodivergence being discussed and taken apart on the internet and people really understanding that. I'll be honest, I'm still waiting for dyslexia. I think it's very rude that dyslexia has not had its cool moment to shine. Like, when is it going to be about me? I'm waiting for my moment. When it hits, that'll be my content stream. Anyway, I completely digress. The reason that I'm talking about neurodivergence is because for so many women, their diagnosis is missed when they're in school. And actually, women can move through the world feeling like something just isn't quite right. And they're trying to find coping mechanisms, like presuming that it's about themselves or personality flaws and really internalizing some of the things which are quite classic symptoms of a neurodivergent condition, but internalizing them and almost like beating themselves up for it. And then suddenly they get a diagnosis and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that changes everything. And this was what happened to today's guest, Lauren. We actually met through a volunteering day. And we didn't really chat much in the volunteering. And then at the end of the day, a couple of us were getting coffee and we went and grabbed coffee. And straight away, I just honestly fell in love with her. She's really vibrant and like maybe eccentric almost in like the way that she comes across, like super fun, really playful. She's always dressed incredibly. She wears loads of colour. She's a super like exciting person to be around and just looks amazing all the time. And that is also kind of what she does for work. Like she is a social media creator amongst being like a really excellent marketer and also a writer and a poet and all of these different things. You can tell her brain moves very quickly. She's very, very switched on. We were talking about business and she was throwing out like lots of different ideas. We were talking about dating. We were talking about relationships. She really just was an open book from the first time I met her. And honestly, it was such a pleasure that I was like, okay, I have to get this girl on the podcast. And then later on, I saw that she was posting about ADHD. And I was like, that's kind of interesting because a few of my friends have had late stage diagnoses. And I think that's the thing is for a lot of us, we might be trying to understand ourselves more and more in these years. And sometimes something comes through which just sheds loads of light on it. And whether you're diagnosed early or diagnosed late, there's kind of this split in the road where you're either going to really accept it and learn to work with it, or potentially just battle it your whole life. And as I said, internalize some of those feelings and feel like something is wrong with you when it's absolutely not. Or maybe you've just always watched these videos and been like, okay, that sounds a little bit too familiar and a little bit too much like myself. Maybe even your friends send them to you and like, oh my God, this is absolutely you. Then I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. We get into all sorts of tangents. We go down a whole attachment theory tangent, which if you've been listening for a while, you know, I just love. We talk about limerence. We talk about rejection, hypersensitivity. We kind of become armchair psychologists, which is my absolute favorite state to be. Can I actually ask a favor while you're here though? I'm trying to grow the channel in every possible way that I can. So if you're watching on YouTube, if you could like or subscribe, that'd be amazing. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, please, please do follow the podcast because all of those like downloads and follows and things, all of that metric just helps us grow. And if you feel like leaving a review, there's a little 5-star button. I would really, really appreciate it. So any way that you can support like that is so greatly appreciated. But anyway, that's enough yap from me. So let's get into the episode with Lauren.
If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Well, Lauren, welcome to the beige couch.
Oh my God, thank you. I feel like I really stand out.
You really do. It's good though. It's good to stand out against this. You don't want to be like just a floating head amongst a world of beige.
I know. I was literally, when I was getting dressed this morning, I was like, is this going to be too much?
No.
Or is it going to be okay?
I mean, you're a fashion girly, so you have to bring fashion
thank
to the couch.
You. I'll take that title.
We should kick off actually with setting a little bit of context, because we're going to get into loads of chat on ADHD. Mm-hmm. But before we get in, tell us ASL, as we used to say on Habbo Hotel.
Oh my God, ASL, AOL?
ASL, age, sex, vocation.
Yeah, but that would be AOL. Did you have like, not AOL, MSN Messenger?
MSN, that's the one.
Yeah, MSN Messenger was literally like ASL.
ASL, and then they're like, show me your boobs on webcam, and it's all pixelated. You're like 12.
Sorry. I did not do that. No, I just used to talk to like the boys that were at my school.
Yeah,
and then randomly I'd get like...
Never put your tiny boobs out on webcam.
No, are you okay?
Sorry, this got off to such a rogue start. I know I'm going to like cry laugh during this. It's not going to be good. Okay,
ASL,
wait.
Right.
ASL.
Oh, okay, so we'll actually do, well, obviously I'm female. I am 35, from London. Background started in fashion. Oh, I started working at ASOS. And obviously plus size. So started posting my outfits online back when like Instagram was like, there was like five filters and it was only photos and there was like all sepia mode and started posting my outfits. And back then I said like the plus size community, especially like fashion, was quite small. And then it just kind of like, I don't know, it just kind of evolved from there. I was always online to some capacity, but I always had like a full-time job. And then I went traveling for a bit, came back, was really interested in influencer marketing, weirdly, as an influencer or content creator, however you want to call it.
Yeah.
And then, which I know we've spoken about a lot offline, my career started veering into like influencer marketing itself, went into agency life, found the behind the scenes like fascinating, ended up moving to New York.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the New York.
Yeah, like New York minute. It was just insane. But was I messaging you not that long ago about how the toxic agency that I was in at the time and had like a really traumatic time and then ended up having to decide whether I should like kind of pop that balloon, like my life ambition of moving to New York and come home, because it was attached to my visa. Yeah, and that's kind of me in a nutshell. I think over the year, like my page has evolved from like fashion. Now I say I'm quite like feelings focused. Like I love to kind of talk about the struggles I go through in my 30s and be open and vulnerable with like my audience. So I do a bit of poetry as well.
I'm loving the poetry.
Thank you so much. I've been thinking about this a lot. I've obviously just taken a bit of a social media break and thinking about where I want this to go, because I have like big visions for it. And it's weird because when I was younger, I used to like write, you know, when you get a task at school.
Yeah.
And obviously like I'm a creative, and whenever we used to have like poetry tasks, I would love it. I remember I've still got somewhere a poem about 9/11.
No, you know, that's my special subject.
Are you joking? I'm obsessed with it as well.
Stop. I am obsessed with 9/11. My friends have literally, my best friend will be listening to me like, stop fucking bringing up 9/11 on your podcast, because I do it all the time. Obsessed with it. I've watched like
you weren't even,
every documentary
you didn't
that
even,
ever existed.
Same. You didn't even bring it up this time. It was me.
It was you.
Yeah. So that was like the first poem that I remember like writing, and I've still got it in a box somewhere. And then it's so random. But a few months ago, I was dating this guy and he was writing poetry. And I was like, I know.
Love that. We love a creative man.
Mm-hmm. So he was writing poetry and I was like, oh, I'm a bit of a writer or whatever. And then obviously I stopped dating him, obviously, as if everyone knows that. Stopped dating him. But he inspired me. And I was just like, and I found it, I've never been like much of a journaler. Is that even a word? Like,
yeah.
I've never really like journaled a lot, but because I always felt like I was repeating the same thing again and again, which was very ADHD. You're just constantly repeating the same thing. And I just found it so much easier to get like my feelings, emotions out, like through, I guess, like romanticizing words and like poetry. Mm. Yeah. And I just have like this massive note section on my phone of just so many poems that I'm like, I need to do something with these.
Yeah.
And I will.
I love them. I honestly love them. And also, I was also so like that kid when I was younger, which is surprising because I am dyslexic as fuck. Like anyone who follows the pod, I often, like every Tuesday when I release an episode, I spend the first hour of the day, my friends messaging me being like, you spelt this wrong, you spelt this wrong, you spelt this wrong. I'm uploading, deleting, I'm editing. Like that is my Tuesday morning, just correcting all my mistakes. But I loved writing poetry. And I remember I had a teacher and I used to like, her name is Mrs. Bamford, shout out to her, she's still around. But I would bring my poetry in and be like, this is some stuff I'd written. And it was so nice, like such a great expression of self. And as you say, like writing it in a way that has to be eloquent and like it has a certain format. It's dreamy.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like I just, there's something about writing, specifically like storytelling and like poetry, that makes me feel like so alive. Yeah. Like there's some sort of satisfaction that comes with it. And I've always loved writing, but always been so scared to commit to it.
Right.
So I started a Substack last year and I was always scared of that commitment of having, again, this is so ADHD, but like it's that consistency.
Mm.
Like consistency definitely feels like it's not a strength for me.
Right.
And it's something I'm quite insecure about. And I always felt like if I committed to writing, I would have to commit to something that had to be like very consistent, like releasing a weekly like Substack article or something like that. So yeah, I always kind of put writing off for such a long time, even though I knew I was quite good at it. And I loved it. I think I was so scared of falling out of love with it that I hesitated on starting.
Yeah.
So crazy.
No,
I get
it? That. It's like the fear of failure thing, isn't it? It's like,
yeah,
you don't want to start something and then it proves your thought about yourself of like, oh, I'm inconsistent. And then you're like,
yeah,
now I have proof I am inconsistent. Yeah. Whereas if you don't start, you don't ever get that proof.
Yeah. And I think it's like not all work, so I know that not everyone has the luxury to like their job or even like love their job or love what they do. But for me, there's always that fear of doing something I love and then coming to resent it because I do it so much.
Mm.
And I think I do find that sometimes with being, like having ADHD is like, if you do something so much, you get sick of it and then you're like, oh, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
Because you're constantly changing. You're constantly like excited by new ideas and like you want to go in like a new direction.
Yeah.
So I think I've always had that fear with writing.
I want to get into those things because you said one of the ADHD things you'd noticed was writing the same thing over and over, why you didn't journal. But then the other thing, having of being inconsistent or feeling like you're being inconsistent with something. What are like the things you were noticing in your life that you were like, maybe there's something going on here, which is beyond just like my personality. Like what were the symptoms?
Oh my God. So I actually never even thought I had ADHD. I just knew that something wasn't quite... I think it was more that I would question why I would act the way I acted or like why I would struggle with certain things and why no one else seemed to have those issues.
Right.
Particularly like in school, at work, concentration was one of them. I always used to get called a chatterbox at school, always. And I always remember during lessons and or meetings, literally wanting to climb the walls when it was almost, you know, like you weren't the one talking. So yeah. It was like someone talking at you, whether it was a teacher with a whiteboard in front of you, teaching you something and you just had to sit there and absorb it. Or you'd have to sit like in exams or you're in a meeting and someone was presenting something for 45 minutes straight. I felt like I needed to scream.
Really?
Those were the things I'd really struggle with. Concentration and just staying focused on one thing. Always feeling like I couldn't stick to something. That was, when I got diagnosed, that was so validating because it was something I was so aware of. And then my mum had always said to me, oh, you always, not in like a, it wasn't in a bad way, it wasn't an insult or anything. It was more like an observation.
Mm.
My mum would always say, oh, you never finish anything, or like you pick something up and you kind of drop it. And I always, then I think it became an insecurity of mine, just because I hated that I would never finish anything.
Mm.
So there were things like this that I was hyper aware of, but didn't understand why no one else seemed to like have that issue.
Did you like internalize it and think it, like, what did you think about yourself before you had your diagnosis? Did you think they were just personality traits?
Yeah, I thought they were personality traits. I remember when we, like, during school exams, I would never study ever. Like, I'd study like the day before.
Mm.
And I don't know how I got grades that I did. Like, I'd always was winging. I was a wing it girl. Like, always. Yeah. Even now. Like, even if I had to, I don't prepare for meetings, really. I don't prepare for interviews. Like, I find that if I prepare, I overthink everything.
Mm.
So for me, it feels better to not. And I just can't, it doesn't, the time thing doesn't work for me, as in, like, being prepared in advance, like, that doesn't work. So I'm all very, like, it's all very last minute. Like, the panic, I thrive off of that stress.
Okay.
So it just, yeah, it's almost like that condensed time period of, like, performing works better for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it does. And I actually believe in myself in terms of, like, showing up. Like, I feel like I can blag
stuff.
You're like,
I'm not going to fluff it. I know it's in there.
Yeah.
I just don't want to list it all out in an order of how I'm going to talk about this thing.
Yeah. I think I'll overcomplicate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What led you to getting diagnosed?
It was, when was it? Must have been like 2020. When did I get diagnosed? 2022 I got diagnosed. I think it was like 20.
So how old were you then?
So I was 31. So it's 2021.
Mm.
I think this is when things started to come up a lot on TikTok.
Yeah. ADHD had its moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was right at the beginning, I would say. And I remember seeing those videos all the time, like the ADHD ones. I didn't pay any attention to them for so long. I was like, so unrelated to me. Like, I think I had, much like a lot of people, you have this preconception of what ADHD is.
Yep.
And it is always usually associated to the behavior that we see in boys.
Yeah, it's very much interesting. Actually, I was looking it up and it said boys are 2 to 3 times more likely to be diagnosed as kids because the expression of the condition is really, really different. So they're often like disruptive and stuff, and therefore people notice and they're like, something might be up with this kid, he might need a hand.
Yeah 100%. Like, and they're often categorized as like naughty and loud and boisterous and hyper. Yeah. And although obviously I think any kid at that age is a bit like hyper, I never saw myself as like those things. Like, I was never really naughty or couldn't sit still and was hyper and had loads of energy. Like, it wasn't like that.
Mm.
So when the videos started coming out online of women being undiagnosed and people were talking about ADHD, I ignored them for so long. Like, I just, you know, like, just so unrelated to me, just swipe past it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what made me stop on that particular video, but I stopped. And I was like, oh, that sounds like me. These sound like the things that I've struggled with like my entire life. And I just started paying attention more and more and more. And I was like, shit, like, this sounds like me. And it's all things that I'd internalized for my entire life and just thought, oh, there's just something a bit wrong with me or like not right. But I never really thought that it was related to like a condition. Like I said, I just thought it was me.
Just who you are.
Yeah, because I used to always think, why is no one else struggling in meetings? Like, I was literally like, my eyes would be like darting around the room or another thing that I used to fidget so much. And this was a comment made by my family always. Because no one wanted to sit next to me on long haul flights. We used to go to Florida every summer. and no one would want to sit next to me.
Right.
Because I was the fidget.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like these are just, I just thought they were me. There's just so many things. And then I was like, oh, actually, I think this is actually the thing that I've been, like, these are the things I've really struggled with. So then I pushed to kind of get a diagnosis.
Did you go through just GP?
Went through the GP, but it was before, I think, I had to wait a while.
Mm.
But I think it was before the influx that's now happened, right, where, like, the waiting lists are, like, super long. It's a super long process to get diagnosed. And I think you almost have to, like, jump through hoops to get a diagnosis.
Right.
Like, I'm now speaking to people who their parents are getting interviewed or, like, spoken to by, wow, like, health professionals.
As adults?
Yeah.
Wow, that's surprising.
Yeah. That guy I dated, I think he said his parents or his mum got, like, had to be spoken to by a health professional.
Hmm.
Which again, like, super interesting. I didn't have that. I did have quite an intense assessment with a psychologist.
Yeah.
It was like maybe like 90 minutes to 2 hours.
Mm.
And obviously prior to that, I'd had an assessment on the phone with my GP, but it was all like virtual. And then, yeah, and then I got diagnosed and I was like, wow, this explains everything.
Yeah.
And then once I got diagnosed, I then knew that my dad had it.
Right.
Because of the way that he is. And then obviously I got obsessed. Like, so ADHD.
You're diagnosing people left, right and centre.
Yeah, diagnosing people left, right and centre and hyper-focused on the topic of ADHD.
Right.
So ADHD. Yeah, and I was like, do I want to take medication for this? Do I not? And I did actually go down the medication route, which was life-changing to begin with.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it Ritalin? Is that what they still do?
No, it's Elvance, which is Vyance in the US. Yeah. But it was a process.
Right.
Because, like, you can keep increasing. And there's just, again, there's so much you're not told about. And, like, GPs don't necessarily understand. I think, like, I want to say, like, the first month on my medication, 2 months, like, I would have like a repeat conversation with the psychologist,
right,
just to check in that my meds were okay. And then after that, it's like you're left to your own devices. But they don't tell you, like, they don't, the side effects on like the packaging and stuff, but they don't talk you through them.
Yeah, what are the side effects?
Okay, so headaches, anxiety.
Oh, really? Fucking hell, you don't want that piled on top, do you?
No. So this is the thing, it's like until you find your, like, balance. Mm. Like, you can also struggle with insomnia. You can struggle with, like, tense muscles, which was a problem that I had. Oh, my God, TMI, but, like, makes you, like, shit.
It gives you the shits?
Yeah, it can make you, because it's a stimulant.
Oh, that's so interesting, because so many medications stop you from shitting.
No,
so.
I wonder if, like, maybe some people have had that, but, like, it literally is, like, just, it's like, it's a bit like caffeine.
This is what I don't get about ADHD medication though. It's like that it is a stimulant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like someone, you would think that someone who's already really stimulated by everything, giving them a stimulant would be a bad thing, but it changes their baseline.
It's so crazy. Suppressed appetite was another one. So I lost loads of weight really quickly.
Right.
I had no appetite.
Quite a lot.
There's quite a lot, but I think that's why a lot of people, like, struggle with it. There was someone else that I spoke to and they tried the medication for like a week and they were like, this isn't for me.
Mm.
I was surprisingly very, I was persistent with it, and yeah, I was consistent, surprisingly. And I really looked into what worked with it, what didn't. I looked into like my nutrition.
Right.
When best to take it, how best to take it. Like, I had such a morning ritual. I have to take like medication for something else. So it was like, take my medication. And I still do this now. I'm on the lowest dose now, but I was at the highest at one point,
uh-huh,
which I would love to go back off again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't, because of my wrist injury.
Mm.
That affects my arm. So it can make, obviously, the medication can make you really tense and your muscles tense.
Right.
So I think it can have a bad effect on that, because there was a point where I was like, I am in so much pain. And I think that that was not contributing because my neck was sore. So I'm now on the lowest dose. But some days I'll like maybe have one of my older ones that have caught
a little top up.
A little top up if I'm like, I need to get loads of stuff.
A little treat. Like, I need to.
It keeps you focused.
What's that film? Limitless.
Yeah.
You're like, I need to go into that. Does it feel like for you, was it like flipping a switch and you're like, oh, I feel massively different?
Yes. And I've never had that. I haven't had it since. Like, it was, I think, at the beginning, like life changing. Like, I was able to get through so much stuff.
Right.
Mm. But I think that you have to be so considerate of like your diet, like how you're consuming it, making sure that you're drinking enough water, like staying active. Like these are things I think people don't necessarily do and they're not educated on it. Mm. So for me, like I went into this, I had this morning ritual. It was like I'd have to have my other medication, then wait 30 minutes because of that. Mm. And then I'd have to, and then I'd have a coffee. And then I wouldn't dare have my breakfast for another hour because the caffeine and the medication would literally make me anxious. So then, and then I would have protein. So because I've now learned the medication works better with protein. And also protein's better for ADHD.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know.
You went like holistic knowledge of it. I mean, this is, you can tell you went down the rabbit hole.
Right? I went down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know the, I'm not going to claim to be like, you know, a scientist or.
Yeah, this is not medical advice.
A nutrition. But you can look this up online and it's true.
Yeah.
So it's something to do with the neurotransmitters in your brain. With ADHD, you are more susceptible to crashing. On like carbohydrates, sugars.
That makes sense, yeah.
So it's a heavier crash. And then things that work better in helping like calm the symptoms of ADHD is like high protein foods, especially like omega-3, like fish.
Mm.
So for a really long time, like I only had salmon in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah. And I felt that my medication worked better when I had a high protein breakfast as well.
Amazing.
So these are all things I had to figure out by myself.
Yeah.
Which is insane. But I did for a really long time and it worked. I wish I still, I'm not gonna lie, like I wish I still had that period where it was like, yeah, I've kind of nailed this.
Yeah.
I felt like my routine was really good.
And like, how did that play out? Because obviously your work, you went into your work, I imagine you've done like perm jobs and you've done like more kind of serious corporate jobs and stuff, but your work now is pretty flexible. I would imagine it works quite well with someone who has ADHD because it's super creative, it's exciting, fast moving.
I think it can be both.
Really?
I think so. I definitely think I was never meant to do a 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
I think that restriction has never worked well for me. And I now know that because I've never been in a, since I've been diagnosed, I've not been in full-time employment.
Right.
I've only done like freelance and contract work for other people or my own like stuff. Mm. But now that I look back, I'm like, that was too restrictive for me. That didn't work for the way that my brain worked because I could get so hyper-focused on something and then I could do like, When you're hyper-focused in ADHD, hyper-focused mode, it's like you could do 2 days' work in about 3 hours. It's insane. It's like,
really?
But that's, it's hard for me to get into that zone.
Right.
But now I definitely think that fluidity and flexibility is super important for me. But I think if you are self-employed and you work for yourself, I think it can be a bit of a double-edged sword because you have to find ways to keep yourself motivated.
Mm.
And like one of the biggest like symptoms of ADHD is like procrastination when you feel overwhelmed and not wanting to do like mundane tasks as we'd see them.
Yeah.
Like those, that can be really tricky and you can get so sidetracked by something new, like I think you're very susceptible to like shiny object syndrome, all the time.
Can relate.
Yeah, all the time. So you're like, oh my God, this new exciting project, let's do this. Or you'll see someone else. I'm constantly inspired by other people.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what social media is like.
Mm.
You see someone do a video and you're like, oh, oh, I could do a business like that. I could do that.
Yeah.
And then you, next thing you know, the 2 hours that you were supposed to spend doing replying to emails, well, you've now just created a whole business plan for your new bakery.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
How's that bakery going? Did that bakery ever open?
Do you know what I mean? Literally, yeah. That is what it's like.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good. Like I always say to my friends always come to me if they want like business ideas or they want help with being creative, because I say like my superpower is I could write you a whole business strategy in like 30 minutes. Like,
yeah. I mean, even the first time we met, I remember it was you, me and Heidi chatting like outside having a coffee.
Yeah.
And you just throw things out there. You're like, have you thought about this? Oh, yeah. What do you do this? And it's like ping, ping, ping. And you can almost see like the parts of your brain.
Yeah.
Just like going down these little routes of like opportunity.
I know. I'm like, can I have a job where I just give people ideas?
Oh, that'd be such a dream.
I'm like, I could give, like, there's, it's just endless.
Yeah.
I saw an article the other day. It was on Substack and it was like the infinite grief of having ADHD and constantly coming up with ideas, mm-hmm. but never being able to execute them.
Mm.
Because you've just, you've got so many ideas. I saved it and I had a read through it and I was like, this is just so relatable. And it is like that, because it's like, how do you choose what you know is going to work for you and that you're going to be able to stay focused on?
Yeah.
That's really hard.
Yeah. Do you get stuck in like, because I mean, I'm a queen of this, but like I get stuck in decision paralysis of like, there's 1,000 things I want to do. And then I actually do none of them. And then sometimes 6 months will go by and I'll be like, oh, you've actually literally done none of them.
Yeah.
Because you were too busy trying to work out which one would be the right one to do.
100%.
So bad.
Or like the fear of like it not working.
Yeah.
And, or you don't know where to start.
Mm.
And you don't know what the right route is. And then there's certain things about the project that aren't that exciting, because that's with any route that you want to go down, any business that you want to open, there's always parts of it that aren't fun.
Mm.
Whether it's that you love creating content, but the actual posting part of it is not something you enjoy, which is, for me, that's the bit that I don't like. I don't like posting it. I don't like then the fact that I have to technically engage to help me from the algorithm point of view. I like communicating with my audience. I love that part of it. I love replying to DMs and comments, etc. But I have to, you know, like, it's almost like you have to then stay on the app. It's not like I can close it down and then come back and reply to those comments. Or, I don't know, that feels like a commitment. I don't like commitment.
Right.
Not, well, certain things I don't like committing
to. Okay, but so, I mean, this all sounds like a lot to manage. And I think everyone, like, has their own, like, tips and tricks and stuff, but what do you do since your diagnosis? Have you found ways, especially in your work, that you're like, this is what I have to do in order to be successful and be able to do, you know, turn up every day when you do have a job?
Yeah, okay. So like, I know that if I want to have like a really good focus day, absolutely, like protein, breakfast, like I won't do like a quick grab and dash.
So interesting.
Breakfast, like I will really think about, If I'm completely honest, I do think this is typical ADHD. From a psychological point of view, you are naturally very hard on yourself and very critical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very critical on the things I haven't done, but I think like having conversations like this and I reflect, I'm like, oh, actually, since you got diagnosed, I would say like 26 out of my 30 breakfasts a month are focused on protein. And I don't skip breakfast.
So you actually have built routine.
I have routine, but I wouldn't recognize that. Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, I haven't done this and da, da, da. And I, even when I go out and, you know, like you get breakfast on the go or whatever, I'm like, right, where's the protein? Like, where can I find that? So that's really important to me. I am not as consistent with this, but I'm a morning person, so I will, again, if I know that I have like a really important work day, getting out, move my body, fresh air, because once you do go into like hyper focus mode with work, I'm not getting off that chair again.
Are you one of those people who forgets to eat? Because that is mind blowing to me.
Yeah, I think if I'm in hyper focus mode, absolutely.
Bizarre.
At lunchtime,
could never be me.
But then at dinner, I'm like, I mean, I'm ravenous. Yeah, you're like, I haven't eaten everything
all day. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'll be like, and it's only when I'm in hyper focus mode, I know if I really think about it, the hunger is there, but I am so focused that you it just goes to the side. And it's only when you stop, you're like, oh my God, I'm so hungry. Or like, you know, when you have that first bite and you're like, oh my God, I'm a beast. Like, I'm so hungry.
Ripping open packets, yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, what about like, because I see you've got an Apple Watch on.
Yes. Oh, it's a Fitbit.
Is it a Fitbit? Okay, yeah. So it doesn't get notifications and stuff on there.
No. Oh, yeah, no, it does. It gets calls. It doesn't bring up like WhatsApp or anything.
Right.
One of the other things I would say is like, I've completely shut down all notifications on my phone, which is a big thing for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I know I'm susceptible to being sidetracked, distracted. Mm-hmm. So WhatsApp was one of the first things. I don't have my notifications on for WhatsApp. No Instagram, no TikTok. I actually, at the moment, have hidden both of those apps. So I have to go out of my way to find them. But yeah, I think the only notifications I have on are emails, which maybe sounds a little bit crazy.
Mm.
I have, but I put Do Not Disturb on from like a certain time at night. I think it's like 9.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, the only reason I have emails on is because if something comes in and there's like a time restriction on it, that's just something I want to be aware of. Like sometimes with campaigns, they're like, they need to know by like end of day or something.
Right.
But I wouldn't say it, my emails don't like make me anxious. I wouldn't say I've got like influx of emails all the time.
But have you then turned off all like your shopping emails and like newsletters? Because I'd get distracted by those. If something came in, it was like, because of Alice, new dresses, I'd suddenly be like, oh,
I don't think I've
a little browse.
I don't think I've got any really many newsletters. I'm quite strict with my emails, as in like I unsubscribe from a lot. And I have like an old inbox that like my ASOS is attached to. No notifications come through on that.
Okay, yeah, that sounds sensible.
Yeah. So like that's a good ways of working, I think. It's like having that distraction. Also, I think I said to you earlier of like time, that condensed time period.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll set myself a timer.
Like Pomodoro.
I have heard of this.
The Pomodoro technique is the only way I survive.
Yeah. So I will do that.
Yeah.
If I need to like tidy something up or if I want to try and get a task done. I think it was Mel Robbins as well that said when you don't want to get into like a piece of work where you're procrastinating on something, just set yourself like a 10-minute timer and just be like, I'm going to commit to 10 minutes of this. And then after the 10 minutes, most of the time you're so in the zone that you're like, fine. You can take a break and then come back to it and try again.
Yeah, yeah.
And then recently...
So actually, we should just stop on that for a minute because it's a fucking amazing tip. I think I used to do it for 5 minutes and it was like, yeah, literally just do 5 minutes of the thing that you don't want to do, whether it's going through emails or like starting your tax return or like putting your list of expenses in your like accounting software, 5 minutes. And then suddenly you look at it, it's like, okay, I've done like 25 and I'm actually halfway done.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, that 5 minutes has changed everything.
Right.
So good.
Literally. Yeah, so that, again, it's that the pressure, like my brain works better with it, if that makes sense. I don't like it when I've got too much time.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps. I've also recently, and I've started listening, there's like a podcast and I do find it a bit, it's very man focused.
Aren't they all?
Yeah. Like
this one.
you know, the motivational stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I do find them really frustrating because I'm like, I wish there was one for like women or like a bit more. There are women on there. It's not that they're not, but a lot of the time it's a man yelling in my ear, like, get up and go. And I'm like, well, okay.
David Goggins.
Yeah. David Goggins. It's exactly it. And I'm a bit like, okay, I'll get up and go. Like,
yeah.
So as much as I'm like, fuck's sake, it's men. But at the same time, it works.
You like, need like a bit of hyping.
Yeah. Like it makes me feel like, because it's just, I find that kind of motivational speaking energizing.
Yeah.
I think inspiring. Like I said, I find inspiration in other people.
Mm.
So I always find, I think that's something I forget about. I think living by yourself, working by yourself, some days I'll go like 3 days and I'm like, oh, I feel really weird. And then I'm like, oh, I haven't seen anyone. I haven't spent time with anyone.
Mm.
And it's hard to recognize that. I think, again, this does feel very ADHD. If something is outside of your periphery, it almost doesn't exist.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I've had to like learn that with food and my clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's kind of set up so I can see everything. Because if I don't see it, it's not there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so weird, isn't it?
I'm just imagining your house just having like walls and walls of like shelves where you can just see everything all the time.
Like my wardrobe is like, yeah, like it's all like open.
And you don't find that overwhelming? Because I'm like, I don't want to see anything because if I see it, I know it's there and I don't want to know. I'm like, I don't want to live in like a white box, a minimalist space.
Oh, it's not. Oh, you want to live in.
Yeah. Like if I see the things, I'm like,
hello.
You're like, I'm not queen of minimalism.
Do I look like I'm minimalist? White wall, bitch. No. Like, I'm like, give me the colour.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. No. I think my brain is like messy. So,
yeah.
Having tons of colours of clothes is like, that works for me.
That's fair.
And yeah, I have to, like, in my fridge, I have to put certain foods in clear box trays
mm-hmm.
so I can see them all. So I can, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think when stuff goes to the back of the fridge, I'm like, oh, I forget that that exists.
Yeah.
Like my whole weekly food shop is so strategic because I will forget what I've ordered to then make that week for dinner.
And then your protein's going off in the fridge.
And that's it.
Your fridge is full of protein.
Exactly.
So.
That I can't see.
I really want to come back. Something you said earlier that was interesting to me is you were like, I don't like commitment.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
There's certain things that I will commit to. Like I'm really good with like making social plans.
That's good. No one likes a flaky person.
No, like I'm not flaky. And like when I make commitments with friends, social plans, like I love planning holidays in advance, like things like that.
Yeah.
Not a commitment phobe with. But anything that ties me down a little bit or I see as tying me down, I'm like, like that scares me. Like everyone keeps telling me to get cats or a cat.
Okay.
And I love...
I can see you like a Bengal or something.
Give me five.
Yeah.
Like I love cats like so much. Like I went and cat sat not long ago. My aunt and uncle's two cats at their house. And my friend came and she stayed and she was like, I cannot get over how much you talk to the cat. And had the conversations you have. Like, I am literally the epitome of like childless cat lady.
Childless cat lady.
Just without the cats. yeah, like, and she was like, I just can't get over it. She was like, you need to get cats. And every time people see me with cats, they're like, you need to get cats.
Makes sense, yeah.
But I love all animals. Mm-hmm. Like, give me the dogs as well. But dogs feel even like more of a commitment than a cat.
For sure, yeah.
So I would love cats, but I just, that is like, like, that's too much. And sometimes mum and dad will ask me to like cat sit and I'm like, oh, I don't know. Yeah, it's like just so far away. Like I don't, like it makes me feel a bit like suffocated.
That's so interesting because like you need the routine to keep yourself functioning. But then is it like the minute the thing is external? Like, do you think you've got really good like internal control in that you can like, you know what you need to function, you can make that happen, but if somebody else is trying to put something on you, then it's like
yeah, maybe. I think so. I think I'd feel that a bit with work as well. If someone was like, oh my god, I literally just got the fear of like someone give me like a 12-month contract with work,
oh,
I'd be like,
no,
whoa, like that's really scary.
Are you someone, because I'm so guilty of this, I'm the same as like, I won't take anything over like 2 months because it will make me freak out, because I'm like, what if I suddenly want to go to Ibiza? It's like, I'm not, I'm just sitting in London, but I want the freedom. But I will then extend. And now my clients know, it's like, she says she'll take 4 weeks. She'll actually work with us for like 5 months, but
yeah,
I don't want to
be
told it's 5 months up front.
I don't know. I could do like three, I think 3 months would be good for me.
Yeah.
6 months, I'd maybe get the fear a little bit. Which is, yeah, interesting. And the thing is, I've never also been in like a serious relationship, but I don't know if that's a commitment thing.
Do you have a moment where you feel trapped, or is it more that you just often, the people you're dating, you're like, not for me?
No, I've had like a massive awakening this year that like, I've just going for the wrong people, like constantly, because you obviously know when it doesn't go somewhere or like it doesn't work out how you want it to, that it's not like, you know, you're not going for the right people. They're not right for you.
Mm.
But I think this year, like, I really kind of took the time to understand my attachment styles.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have to, will you disclose?
Yeah, no. Yeah. So I would say basically at the start of the year, someone came back into my life that I dated a few years ago. Mm. And at the time when I dated that person originally, I was an anxious attachment style.
Yeah.
And I would still say, like, when it's not like if you're either like an anxious or an avoidant, it's not like those all of a sudden you're going to become secure and then those mm-hmm. things are never going to come up for you.
Yeah.
I think that person coming back around again and not really understanding what they wanted from me when it didn't work out the first time, because they were unavailable, it just kind of led me down a path to understand what I'd gone for, like, as in who they were, but it was more about me.
Were they avoidant?
Yes.
And you were anxious?
Yes.
Which is match made in heaven.
But match made in hell, really.
Match made in hell, but so fun for the first, like, 3 months. Most fun thing ever, because it's like cat and mouse.
Yeah.
For people who haven't read this, like, the book is Attached. It's based on that the attachment that you build when you're a child basically is what guides the rest of your life. So if you have a caregiver who's very, very secure, the kid tends to be secure. If you have a caregiver who maybe is a little bit more detached, the child is often anxious. They're always like looking for that kind of reassurance. And if the child is someone, what creates an avoidant? I think it's like avoidant is often that they have a picture perfect idea in their head and they will like love bomb and they have an idea that they this person has to be perfect. And then if something deviates from what their idea of that is, they freak out and avoid.
Yeah, so, but I think a lot of the time, like, if you're going to date an anxious or you're going to date an avoidant, you need to be secure. And I think you need to have patience for both.
Yeah.
Because it's not like an avoidant can't be secure and it's not like an anxious person can't be secure as well.
Mm.
I think it's understanding attachment styles.
Yeah.
I think with an avoidant, they were never given the space to be vulnerable.
Right.
To show their emotions. So I think with an anxious person, you tend to be more emotional, shall we say, more open with your feelings. And it's actually a bit of a superpower in the sense of, if you're an anxious attachment, you tend to be hyper aware of other people's emotions, which is really amazing if you get to a secure place.
Makes you conscientious, caring.
Very considerate, compassionate, very empathetic.
Mm.
Obviously, the thing is, though, if you're with an avoidant who isn't used to showing their emotions and finds that quite difficult to be vulnerable, then that can be a little bit overwhelming.
Mm.
So that's where, like, you have to be patient.
Yeah.
I think when that person came back around again, I was like, I need to understand, like, my behavior here, like, what I'm going for.
Yeah.
And it was like a massive eye-opening moment, and allowed me to be like, oh, this isn't right. This is what I've been going for. Obviously, the situation, you know, second time, woo.
Yeah.
And it has like completely changed my entire perspective on dating and has allowed me since to make some really empowering like decisions and put my boundaries in place and just say to people, well, actually, no, like, I really value like my time and energy, and recognize when something isn't right.
Mm.
Don't know. It's definitely helped me. I think I spent a lot of my life not feeling good enough.
Mm.
Which probably there's, you know, elements of ADHD in that, but probably goes a lot deeper. And a lot of my life suppressing my feelings and emotions. Like, I went through a really difficult period when I was 16 to like 21, where one of my best friends at the time, my close friends, died basically.
Oh, God.
And then I spent like years suppressing that, right, and not being able to like show my emotions. So it feels like I've gone and done complete 180 and now really champion being vulnerable, being open about my emotions, because I think it was such a painful period to like, I was emotionally avoidant because I wouldn't talk about my feelings.
Right.
So I almost can empathize a little bit with being avoidant.
Yeah.
But then kind of went the other way.
I know.
Yeah, I think there was elements of like avoidant. I think I probably was anxiously attached for a lot of my life, but like quite emotionally avoidant. So I can relate to that when there's an avoidant who probably is not. I have a lot of compassion for like avoidant attachment styles.
Yeah.
Obviously anxious as well.
Yeah.
But because it must be really hard, like when something's not comfortable for you to like open up in that sense.
Totally. And I think that's where like a lot of what we're seeing now in culture and like the challenges with dating dynamics is that you get grown men who are like 35 who've never had that safe space because they don't have, like, I think all the time how fucking lucky we are to be women and to have other women around, because regardless of what goes on in your dating life or your relationships, whatever, most women have other women who are a safe space and like someone you can just be honest to. And I think I can't think of anything more sad than the data I read about men like in their 30s who they have no one that they class as being a close friend and no one that they can speak to. And then you wonder why these guys walk around biting at women at every opportunity. And it's like, you must feel so like encaged in your own emotions.
100%. So I think I've now, again, upon reflection, dated a lot of guys who I have, I think surprisingly for them, been a space where they maybe have been a bit open and vulnerable and maybe shared information or found it easier to share information with me, because I don't get uncomfortable when other people are uncomfortable. It's, again, probably like a bit of a superpower. Some of my friends,
if people like cry in front of you,
not at all.
Doesn't bother you?
No.
Do you cry when other people cry?
I might get a bit emotional. Depends what it is.
Because that's my thing. It's like, I'm very comfortable for people to cry, but as soon as they start crying, I will cry. And then I feel bad because I'm like,
oh, no, I wouldn't. If I cried, it would just be like, oh, a little bit emotional, you know? Like, okay. Not like a boohoo. That's good. Really struggled to cry for like a very long time. No, we can talk about that after. But like, as in like, I couldn't cry because I would have like a panic attack. Yeah. So, I think I dated a lot of men who didn't have that space. And I think you're so right. I think that's in a way like where we've kind of failed men, not women, but like as a society, is that they haven't got those safe spaces to be like open and talk about their feelings. And I hate that. I think that's like so shit. And I sometimes wish I had like more boy mates, because like I would love to have that for people, like have a space like that for people, because sometimes I think also men don't necessarily feel comfortable talking to other men, and it's actually easier to talk to a woman.
Definitely.
And like, I don't know about you, but like, I have such incredible friendships that we've created this safe space for each other, to be vulnerable and like emotional and open.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, something that's like evolved. I don't know about you, because it wasn't necessarily like something I had in my 20s, but like now in my 30s, I'm like, wow, I'm so grateful for this.
Do you know, I think it's interesting. We did a whole episode on this with Heidi, talking about competition. And I think for me, that's the difference between my 20s and my 30s, is like, I do not see other women as competition anymore. Like,
God,
I've got to the point, and I definitely did when I was younger, but now I've got to the point where it's like, I can see that your success, like, if anything, all it does is bring us all like better. And I think that's where my like firm view, and I talk about this with men all the time, is that they struggle to be vulnerable with each other, because in order to be vulnerable, you have to say like something isn't perfect or something isn't working or something's upset me. And that then is the other person, they think they've got like a one up. It's like, well, for me to be like not doing so well, I must be doing worse than the other person. And it's all about competition. I honestly think that's how men move through the world and why often they don't share this. Because to ring up a friend and be like, I don't know, like my girlfriend cheated on me, or like I think my boss is going to fire me or whatever. Inherently, they feel the other man is going, ha, I'm doing better than you.
Yeah. And do you know what's so funny? That podcast that I said, that I listened to on the way here, there was a whole speech about that.
Oh, really?
About, I think it was Kobe Bryant.
Right.
Someone, like one of his teammates, and obviously like this was like in the past, because I know he's not here anymore. But one of his teammates literally brought that up and asked him, why, like this guy, I don't know who it was, but he got to the gym. Kobe was in the gym. He'd obviously been there sooner than him. This guy then finished his workout. Kobe Bryant was still there. And he was like, I'm going to sit around and see how long he's here for. And he was there for like so long. And he turned around and he said to him, why? And he was like, why did you stay there that long? And he's like, oh, because you showed up. And he's right. Like, because I always want to do better than you. And it wasn't like it didn't come across as like an arrogant way. It was more like,
you push me.
Yeah, you push me. But you're so right in the sense of, well, if that's how they constantly see each other, like when do we give them the permission to feel like they don't need to be better than us?
And it's also why I think often there's a dynamic that women become, or female partners become, the sole emotional like dumping ground of their partner. Like often the one person that a man will speak to is their female partner. I was listening to a podcast, I forgot what was his name, I'm gonna forget now, he's like a real like hillbilly, self-confessed hillbilly, what is his name, Theo Von. Like I love Theo Von podcasts, they're so fucking funny, you'd like him. I'll send you one.
Yeah, please do.
But he had Andrew Huberman on, who's like a neuroscientist, and they were talking about that they think one of the best things that a man can have is like a lesbian best friend, or like be surrounded by lesbians, because it's like these are women that you have absolutely no chance of having sex with.
Yes, so
straight away the dynamic changes. But they're women who can give you a perspective, who can like hold that space of being more like emotionally vulnerable, because they're still women, like they still intuitively have, you know, a good grasp on feelings and things. And I was listening to it and I was like, that's so fucking true. Like if more lesbians infiltrated the football clubs.
It's so true.
This is why we, you know, got the Lionesses. Like they've probably got loads of lesbians in there and they're killing it.
Absolutely.
They're changing the world.
Such an interesting, such an interesting perspective, actually. And you are so right, because I think with men and I mean, I don't know the answer to this, but when they're like, oh, can men and women be friends and have like a platonic relationship? Yes, I think they can to some degree. But I think also for sure, there's probably a really high percentage that
lines get blurred.
Yeah. Like something more happens, or it has in the past, or whatnot. Like, I don't know, feelings develop. So the lesbian thing's a great fucking idea.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of the same with like girls having loads of gay friends, like gay men friends. It's amazing. I want to come back to something I read, which I'm going to pull up my little.
Yes.
Yeah. Something I looked up actually when I was like researching for this episode is there's this thing I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called rejection sensitive dysphoria.
RSD.
RSD.
So this was something I was going to bring up to you.
Okay.
Yes.
Go into it.
So rejection sensitivity dysphoria. Something I didn't learn about probably until a year or two after I was diagnosed. Definitely think it's a thing. Like,
because it's not got formal, it's not in like the DSM, it's not formally recognized yet, but it's something that people are talking about, seeing the symptoms, starting to categorize, right?
Yeah, and it's very much associated with ADHD and like you being hyper, like ultra sensitive to being rejected in any capacity. And that is, I mean, it's hard for me to think, because that also can be quite associated to like abandonment issues or mm-hmm. being like anxiously attached or whatever. But it's something for sure I have, for 1,000%. And again, the lines become a little bit blurred of like, would I have it as much if I didn't have ADHD mm-hmm. because of how I've grown up not feeling good enough? Mm. So I don't know, but I definitely think you can take things very personally if your work's critiqued or I think like, yeah, if you don't get something right in work, or even the other week, I have obviously just done this contract job.
Yeah.
And I assumed I was doing well the whole time. But I was a freelancer and obviously I'm not having meetings to discuss my progress.
Right.
But I was, you know, I was very autonomous. Like I didn't need anyone to hold my hand or anything like that. So I assumed I was doing well, but at the same time, I didn't know if I was doing well.
There's no feedback.
Yeah. So then you kind of like creep in and think, I think I need a bit of validation here.
Mm.
So I found that quite interesting because I hadn't done a contract in a really long time.
Mm.
And you can kind of go into that mode of thinking, oh, I feel a bit like my contract's ending soon. Like, why are they not keeping me on? Like, am I not like doing well?
Yeah.
And it's just the fact that they'd got more hires. Like, it was only ever meant to be a certain period of time.
Or like projects come to an end.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you absolutely can be. And I've spoken to some of my other friends about this as well, who have for sure got ADHD, and they're like, fuck, yeah, like, absolutely, this is a thing.
Mm.
This is a thing. I think you can feel it, like, so much so with, like, your friendships or... Yeah, I even felt it with... I had this conversation with one of my best friends yesterday who's moved to Portugal recently.
Mm.
So it's, like, trying to navigate a little bit, like, how... I, you know, like, how do I kind of fit into like her new life?
Mm.
And then one of my other friends is like, my other best friend is moving to Dubai.
Oh.
So there's this kind of abandonment, insecurity in the back of my mind here, which also I think comes a little bit down to like rejection. Like I even said to her yesterday, and I'm sure she won't mind me sharing this, but, you know, I'm a little bit like scared to kind of try and make plans with you or whatever because I don't want to get rejected because you've got like this new life.
Right.
So it's such a thing for sure.
Yeah.
But then there's some things I'm like so like blasé and like confident with and I'm like, yeah, whatever.
So I wonder it comes back again to like there must be something about internal perceptions versus external perceptions. Like I bet it plays into that in some way.
Yeah.
I thought that was so interesting. I'd never heard of it before.
It's definitely a thing, RSD.
And the other one's limerence. Have you come across that one?
No, but tell me, I'm always wanting to learn new things.
Because I was queen of limerence. It's basically defined as a psychological state of intense, involuntary, romantic obsession with another person.
Oh.
So that TV show, You, that's like limerence. So it's things like constant intrusive thoughts about the person. So you're like doing something and you cannot stop thinking of like, what are they doing? What are they thinking about me? It's like, in your head.
Oh,
and then
well, this is interesting.
Strong desire for reciprocation. You don't just want them, you want them to want you back. Extreme emotional highs and lows based on how they respond to you.
Yeah.
Idealization, so seeing them as like perfect and ignoring red flags. And physical symptoms, so like anxiety, racing heart, insomnia. So it's like a fixation or beyond a crush.
Yeah.
And apparently that's also like really
associated
more common to ADHD.
Yeah, I did know that like dating is notoriously harder for ADHD. And I would say that there's definitely things that I can relate to. Remember where I said like where I felt quite anxious in the past? Because I definitely feel like I've moved into more of a secure attachment style, but you just don't know. There could be someone that triggers that again.
Also, you can be completely secure and like I think I've done that shift as well from being like super anxious into secure, and then just one thing can trigger the thing and your behavior just goes whoosh. And then sometimes the next day you're like, wow, that's not me at all. Like, how did I go back to that place so quickly?
Yeah, so I can definitely, there's been, I would say, times this year where I've had like a bit of a I've checked myself and been like, what are you doing? Like, as if you're allowed, like, this is not cool.
Yeah.
Like, but then I've put a boundary in place. So I feel like where I feel like I'm able to recognise those and are more self-aware to them,
right,
and check myself. Whereas I think in the past, absolutely have I been hyper-focused on someone, feel something quite intense, and anxiety.
Just let it run away with you.
Yeah, anxiety used to literally rule dating for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I hated it. I've never, I wouldn't say in my whole 35 years, have I ever at any point enjoyed dating.
Really?
Yeah, no.
But maybe that's the next chapter with the work you've been doing.
Or, yeah, no. Actually, have I? No, there's been times, no, I have enjoyed dating. I think that guy that I said that wrote the poetry, like, he wasn't right for me. Imagine if he sees this. He wasn't right for me, for sure. But that was, he was secure. Right. So there was no, it was like a nice, it was enjoyable. Mm. It was enjoyable. Like, that was, there was no anxiety or anything. I feel like any dating I've done this year, there's not really been any anxiety.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say, oh my God, I loved it. Like, it's but I think anyone would say that.
I don't think anyone really loves dating.
No, I think it's bullshit.
Apart from when you're like 22. I loved dating when I was like 21 because I was so poor in my first creative job that I was like, I just need to eat good food. Like, I have to go on a date because, like, I haven't been to a restaurant in a month and I'm fucking starving and I want to go somewhere good.
Oh, yeah. And me. Do you know who else I think always loves dating? These people, I love them so bad. But it's someone that's come out of a long-term relationship and they're like, I'm ready to date, woohoo. Yes. And they're like tongue out, like, let's do this. Like, I'm going to have the best time ever. And then those people give off some sort of fucking energy that they don't give a fuck.
Mm.
And they're the ones that get in the relationship because they attract the people that are like, oh, she doesn't want a relationship, therefore I want her. Like, so it's that true. I didn't give a fuck energy. Like, they're not looking for anything. Mm. So it finds them.
Yeah.
Like, those people, I think they enjoy dating for the small, the short period of time that they do it. So annoying.
That is so true. All right, I want to ask one last thing before going to yes. 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 What is something that you wish more women knew about ADHD?
I think that it can be a superpower.
Mm.
I think if you work with it, it can be, like, so amazing. There's things, I think, with ADHD, and I'm not saying every single person's like this, but I think if you work with your strengths, I sometimes think that nothing can challenge that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, but we're so self-critical that we tend to focus on the things that we're not good at.
Yeah.
Whereas if I really sit here and I think, oh my God, I can come up with a business strategy in like 30 minutes, or like the fact that I can literally just come up with a poem in about 5 minutes, and everyone's like, wow, so amazing, how'd you do that? And you just take that for granted. The fact that you can go into like hyper-focus mode, and a lot of people with ADHD, not everyone, but a lot of them are extroverts,
mm-hmm.
and they're quite charismatic, or, you know, they've got great energy.
People love being around them. They radiate.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And for some reason, I always attract people that have ADHD as well, which is so funny. But I think if we recognise these a little bit more, like the positive traits, I don't know. I think you, if you didn't love it, then you could.
You could find ways to lean into it and manage it and learn to love it.
Like, I don't think, even though I struggle with it so much at times, I wouldn't have it any other way.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
What a good place to end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Cool. Right, let's go into yes or mess. I keep just thinking on it. Every time I do this, I need a jingle for yes or mess. Okay, I'm going to ask you 5 rapid-fire questions.
Let's go.
To answer yes if you're into it, mess if you're like, no, it's not about that. Organising your life through lists.
Yes. Fucking hot yes. I literally couldn't. My Substack's called The Lauren List.
Oh, is it?
I couldn't. That's so funny. I couldn't function without lists.
Yeah, fair. Being a jack of all trades.
Yes.
Nice. Dopamine shopping is therapy.
Oh. Like, part of me, like, the sensible part of me wants to be like, mess, mess, mess.
But also, you do love to shop.
Yeah, and I will say on this one, because I think you can be very impulsive with ADHD, and I can. And for some reason at night, it always happens just before bed, I will go on a rampage and just order stuff. And then 2 days later, it shows up and I'm like, I almost feel like I did that in my delirious state.
Right.
When I'm going to sleep. So now I have this thing that I will put it in a basket. And then if I still want it the next day, then like when I'm fresh head, I'll buy it.
That's responsible.
Yeah. I don't do dopamine shopping as much anymore.
I did it on Zara. And I like, I actually never shop at Zara ever. And yesterday I was just like, and I put like £400 of stuff in the basket. And I just, click. Everything in two sizes.
It's too easy. It's too easy to do it. That's the thing. They've made it too easy for us.
Oopsie. Having your diagnosis in your Instagram description.
Oh. Can we say yes, mess?
Yeah.
Only because, oh, I feel like I get it. When you've been diagnosed, it does almost become like your entire personality, and it's like a massive awakening. And I think there are people who don't have ADHD who don't understand, and because there's so many people talking about ADHD at the moment, it's kind of like eye roll, like we've all got ADHD to some degree.
Right.
But I think if it has ruled your life and you've always thought that something is wrong with you, and then it's not, that is so liberating. And I think you should be empowered to step into that.
Mm-hmm.
If that's having it in your bio, then fine. But just know that I think your bio is very representative of like who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're all so much more than our ADHD.
Good line. And the last one is lowering your standards to meet a partner.
Mess.
I don't even know why I put that in there.
I think that's a really good question, because I think if you've got unrealistic standards, yes.
Like if someone's been avoidant, looking for the perfect person.
Yeah, like if you look at every single person that I have dated, everyone's like, oh, what's your type? Well, clearly avoidance. Clearly an avoidance.
People who treat me terribly.
But all the people, like if you looked at how they all looked, so different. Like, right. Like I do not have a physical type. And I used to have unrealistic standards, I think, with, oh, they have to be ambitious like me. Mm. And they need to like want to travel the world and have that flexibility. And I had this conversation with someone not that long ago. But then as you get older, I'm not saying everyone becomes self-aware, but as you become more self-aware, like for me, I don't give a shit how much they earn, to be honest.
Mm.
Obviously, I mean, to some degree it's important, but if you're building a life together from a security perspective, but emotional stability and maturity and being able to communicate is the most important thing. Yeah. I want to go into a relationship that feels secure. I don't want to know, like, I don't want to have that feeling of I don't know where I stand with someone. And like, I think in the past people haven't been sure of me, and I know that I deserve for someone to be absolutely 100% unequivocally like sure about me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think security and stability is like the most important thing.
So it's like your standards have changed in what you prioritize now.
Yeah.
Maybe when you're younger, you have more of those like tick boxy things.
Yeah.
And now it's more like the core of who someone is and how they treat you.
It's like kindness and like empathy.
Yeah.
And it feels really hard to find men at the moment who are emotionally like mature, available, and like can communicate in the right way.
Yeah.
But hey, maybe it's because I've been looking for the roller coaster that is avoidance this whole time, and I just need to try something different.
Yeah. I mean, I said this on the episode with Ryan, like on a t-shirt, make it hot and horny to be emotionally available.
So true.
It is. Ugh, there's nothing more attractive than it.
I cannot tell you how attractive it is.
Like, so attractive.
Like when a man is like vulnerable and emotionally mature, I'm like, that I literally love you.
But you know that other men, like toxic men, listen to that and they're like, oh, you want a guy who's like crying. It's like, no.
Yeah.
You just...
So they can cry.
But they can cry, sure.
If that means they're comfortable with themselves, like emotionally, if they cry.
I think what they often miss out, like toxic men, is that they miss out that when you know how someone acts, it makes you feel safe because you know you're not going to get a rug pull. It's 100%. Like, that's all, when they're talking about being providers and safety and blah, 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 it's like emotional safety is like, I know you can go to Magaluf. I mean, hopefully no man in their 35 it's going to be going to Magaluf with their friends. But, okay, let's say Mykonos. You can go to Mykonos with the boys and it's like, I know you're mature enough and I know how you act, therefore there's no worry. And I think that's what they don't realise, is like, it's the understanding someone's behaviour and knowing who they are as a person. That's what emotional vulnerability gives a woman.
Yeah.
It's like, I know who you are because you've shown me, and therefore we're good.
Well, that's it. Yeah. But I think that it's, men see providing as a monetary thing and like a physical thing, as in like,
yeah,
like surface level.
Yeah, well, statistically they're fairly on that, but that's a whole other episode we could be doing.
Emotionally, like providing for someone, as you said,
yeah,
is so much more important to me.
Amen to that.
Amen.
Well, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's been so good.
I think we actually could have done like 4 hours.
Yeah, we could have. Yeah. I told you it would be fine.
Yeah,
we were like, is it going to be okay?